Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is Moshe Bamberger. I am honored to be giving tonight's shir for the illustrious congregation of Kol Das Yeshurun. I'd like to thank Rabbi Yitzchok Israel for inviting me, and I hope that all are well. This week's parsha is Parshas Nasa, and Parshas Nasa is the longest parsha in the Torah. It has 176 psukim, and it's the same amount of psukim as in the longest Kapitel of Tehillim, which is Kapitel Kuf Yotes 119, which also has 176 psukim. And most of the parsha is really actually a repetition. The end of the parsha repeats fully 12 times the same exact harbanos that were brought every single day by the Nasiim. Every Nasi brought an identical carbon for the first 12 days of the month of Nisan, by the Hakamas HaMishkan, when the Mishkan was erected. And other than the names and some slight nuances of differences in Diktuk, basically it goes through the same exact series of gifts and carbonas that the Nasiim brought. The carbone, karas kesev achas, that the carbon consisted of a silver plate, shloshim me'a mishkala, it was 130 in its weight, and then it continues to say about the animals that were brought. And this is, of course, a very, very strange phenomenon, because we know that many of the halachas in the Torah are really only alluded to by a few words, maybe a few letters. All of the many, many halachas about Hilchos Shabbos, for example, are alluded to in a very short, pithy way in the Torah. You'd think that there would be hundreds of psukim about the malachas that are usur and the way that they cannot be performed on Shabbos, but it's all darshan from a few words or a few letters here and there from Gematrius. And the Mishnah and Chagiga, in fact, describes it as Hararim Hatzli and Besara. They are great mountains that are hanging by a hair in terms of the actual psukim in the Torah Shebachsav. We have tons of Torah Shebalpeh backing up everything, but Torah Shebachsav is very, very scarce in terms of that parsha of Shabbos and other parshas. But yet, you find that the Torah, rather than trying to save ink, is actually spending so much almost extraneous wording, so many psukim after psukim, instead of just simply writing that this was the carbon that was brought by all the Nasiim, and in one nice paragraph just sum up that the way it was brought. Instead, we go through one parasha and then another identical parasha for the next Nasi, and another identical parasha for the next Nasi, 12 times, and it's so baffling why the Torah would choose to do this. This is a question that bothered the Rishonim a lot. The Ramban, the Rabbeinu Bechaya, they all, and many others, have their own unique ways of trying to explain this. The Ramban, for example, says that it wouldn't be bakavadik, it would not be respectful if, let's say, you would just have the carbon of Nachshon and Aminadab spelled out, and then you would say, and ditto all the other 11 Nasiim. That would not be respectful for the other Nasiim, so we have to go, in order to protect each and every Nasi's kavod, we have to go and repeat the exact same parsha, just say that the next day it was brought by the Nasi of this Shevet and then of that Shevet. Rabbeinu Bechaya says a little bit different, that each and every one of these Nasiim brought a different Hisairus. They brought a different attitude, a different approach. It might have been that the stuff that was being brought was identical, but the Kavanas and the different approach, the unique way of looking at their relationship with Hashem was very different. And so each and every one of the Nasiim has to be mentioned in their own way, because they were not just cookie cutter karbanos. Every one of the Nesim had their own unique way about the bringing of the karbanos, and the intentions were very different. And that's the way Rabbeinu Bechaye and the Ramban in a second answer seem to be saying a similar idea as we just mentioned. What I want to spend some time on this evening is going through Rav Pinkus, Rav Shimshon Pinkus, who was a great Talmud Chacham and a great Marbis Torah who lived in Eretz Yisrael for the latter part of his life. He grew up in New York, and he became a Rosh Yeshiva, a Rav rather, in the city of Ofakim in the Negev in Eretz Yisrael. And he was a very extraordinary speaker and thinker. He tragically died maybe 12 years ago in a car accident on Erev Pesach. He was driving with his wife and some of his children, and they had a terrible accident, and he died, his wife died, and several of his children in the back seat as well. But his svarim are his legacy. He, you know, after he was nifter, so the remaining sons and others gathered all of the tapes of the many speeches that he gave throughout Eretz Yisrael and the world, and they started producing svarim on the Yom Tovim of his talks, and then on Chumash, and then on Tfila, and there's dozens and dozens of volumes now. They're being translated into English. Very extraordinary Torah, very current, very real, and very relatable. So his svarim are really a living legacy to his great memory. And tonight I want to speak about something that he said on this idea of why it was so important for the Torah to repeat constantly 12 full times the different karbanos that the Nesim brought for the Chanukah from the Mizbeach. So he said that a little bit different than Rabbeinu Bechaye. Rabbeinu Bechaye again says that each of the Nesim had a different kavana, a different approach when they brought their karbanos, and they were hardly identical, but they were very different in terms of the kavanos. He says, or Pinkus, that it wasn't just that it was identical karbanos, but the kavanos were different, but rather even the actual karbanos, meaning the gifts that were being brought, might have been extremely different from one from the other as well. And his example is, like we said before, each and every one of them brought a plate, a kara, which was a certain weight. It was a weight 130 of a weight of silver. But every plate might have been extremely different looking. So, for example, what was a plate, what was considered a plate to the tribe of Reuven might not have been the same exact plate as for the tribe of Shimon and for the tribe of Issachar and Zebulun. Every single one of them was, he says, their own Uma. He brings the raya that every Shevet was called their own nation. The Pasuk says in Bereishis Lamed Hey, Gai Ukahal Gayim. That means that every single tribe of Klal Yisrael is its own unique nation. It's not that we're one nation and we just happen to come from different sons of Yaakov, but rather every son of Yaakov built, in a way, his own nation. They were all unique. And just like countries throughout the world have a very unique way of looking at different things that they use every day, and no country is exactly like another country. So too the Shvatim. He gives an example, a very interesting example of Chinese people versus American people. So Chinese people consider, they don't use a fork like we understand the fork. They use chopsticks. And that's how they, put food in their mouth by use of chopsticks. And they call that a fork. They would call that a fork. If you show them what we consider a fork, they would be very surprised. This is a fork. What are you stabbing the food with your utensil for? That's not normal. You're supposed to pick it up and be nice to it. And when you show an American a pair of chopsticks, they'll say maybe that's a chopstick, but they're not going to say that's not a fork. A fork is a metal thing with four prongs at the tip of it. So every single nation has their own identification for different utensils that are used. So he says that the kara, what was considered a kara for one shevet, might have looked completely different than the kara for another shevet. So one shevet's kara might be a flat plate, one might be a bowl, one might be a something in the middle, one might be a cup, a mug. I don't know, every single person from every single shevet had a different approach and a different opinion about what a kara is. And so it might have all the karas had the equal amounts of weight. They were the same weight of silver if you put them on the scale, but they might have looked completely different. We normally think of all of the karbanos and all of the gifts that were brought by the Nesim as being exactly the same. But Pinkus is saying, a Arabic finish, that it's not necessarily true. It's not that you can't just lump them all together and say, okay, 12 karas were brought all together, and every single one deserves their own unique recognition, and they have to be said separately because they were separate. They were very distinct. The kara was different. The akas was different. Every one of them was based on their own unique perspective on life and the way things look. And so every one of them has to have been spelled out in their own unique way. But if you look at the end of the parsha, when the pasuk puts all the kalim together, it does say karas kesef shnei mesre, that there were actually 12 karas in all. There were 12 plates in all. And Rashi there says that the Torah is coming to teach us that none of them became pasul. But Rapinka says, you don't have to say that. According to what I'm saying, there's a very big chiddush in the pasuk saying at the end, summarizing that there were 12 plates in all. And that is that at the end of the day, we learn that Klal Yisrael had achdus. Klal Yisrael had unity. And at the end, they all came to agreement that whatever other people consider to be a plate, will consider to be a plate also. Whatever everybody else is considering to be a fork, whether it looks like a fork, like a chopstick, like a toothpick, whatever people consider to be a fork or a spoon, will all agree to that. We all were able to come together and say, listen, personally, I use this as a fork, but I could definitely understand how you're considering what you use as a fork. And so there were 12 karas in all, and everybody agreed to that, and that's how Astas was formed among Klal Yisrael, that we all agreed that Elo ve'Elo divrei Elokim chayim. Rapinkus then takes it a step further, and he says that there's still something that's bothering me about my pshat. And that is that when you continue in the parsha, it would have been nice if it just stopped there with the karas, with the plates, and maybe the spoons. But how do you learn my pshat into the rest of the things that were brought every day? For example, they brought each a par and the ayo and a kevis. They brought a cow or a bull and a ram and a sheep. And you can't say that those were different, that they had different looking animals. Each and every shevet had a unique way of considering what a bull is. Presumably, all the bulls were the same and all of the sheep were the same. So Rapinka says, it bothers me. Like, how do I learn my pshat into, if it's true, it should be true across the board that they have to spell out each of the Nesim Karbanos in order to show that even though they were each different from each other, but yet they all agreed at the end to accept everybody else's version of the Karbanos. But he says a beautiful pshat. He says that even here you could say my pshat, because let's say they were bringing the chatas, okay? So the carbon chatas obviously comes because of a chet that you do. The ayla comes when you want to bring yourself up. You want to have Mesiras Nefesh for something. So the Isla represents it's all consumed on the Mizbeach, and that represents the elevation that a person wants to pick himself up and to sacrifice and to offer himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very elevated way. That would be for the Isla and the etc. So every single Shevet brought their own version, he says, of a chatas, their own version of an ayla, and their own version of other types of karbanas. Why? Because what one Shevet considered to be a chatas, what one Shevet considered to be a sin, they might look at another Shevet and say, that's what you think is a sin, that's not a sin. But what you guys are considering to be a chatos, we don't consider it to be a chatos. What you guys consider to be an ayla, something that you are making nefesh for, that's not for us considered mesiras nefesh. We have a different way of looking at things. An example that he gives is that you have, let's say, Shevet Yisachar and Shevet Zevulun. The classic Yisachar is Talmid HaChachamim, and Zevulun is the businessman. And Zevulun, we know, went out on the high seas and did business and commerce, and they would come back and be Mesarnes. They would support the Yisachar, the Talmid Chacham that sat and learned, were supported by Zevulun. And Yisachar would be the Talmid Chacham that are sitting and learning all day. So let's say Yisachar watches Zevulun bring their Ayla. So the Nasi for Shevet Zevulun is bring their Ayla. And what's their Ayla representing? Their Ayla is representing that we are being Meiser Nefesh to go and out onto the high seas and risk our lives and go away from our families for long periods of time. And we are doing this in order that we could earn enough money, not just for our families, but also to support Shevet Yisachar, the people that sit and learn Torah. And that's our Meiser Nefesh. That's our carbon Ayla. Our Ayla is to be able to give up so much of our life in order to enable Torah to be learned. Yisachar might look at that and say, come on, that's not considered to be real Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh, you're just going out and you're making a lot of money, and that try sitting and learning for a long period of time. That's real Mesiras Nefesh. Sitting in the Beis Medrash a whole day and work hard on a melech and try to really be a Talmid Chacham. That's what we're offering up as our Ayla. We're giving up a lot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe Zevulun would look at that and say, oh no, that's not so hard. I wish I could sit in the Beis Medrash all day long and learn, but, you know, we have to go out and earn a living, because otherwise who's going to support you? And this is an open debate about, you know, which is harder and which is more important and which is, the Torah considers them to be somewhat equal on a certain level. The supporters of Torah and the Torah and the Chum itself are considered to be, of course, in certain ways equal, especially if they have an agreement, Yisachar and Zevulun together, about sharing their schar equally in Shemayim. And we know that the Zevulun, when he comes up to Shemayim, will actually not only get schar for Talmud Torah, but he will be considered to, as a Talmud Chacham, and he'll be fluent and conversant in Torah. But every one of the Shvatim has their own opinion as to what constitutes an Ayla. And every one of the Shvatim has their own opinion as to what constitutes a Chatas, for that matter. Maybe for one Shevet, a certain type of sin is considered to be a real sin, and another type of sin that others are worrying about is not a real sin, or maybe vice versa. Maybe the sins that are for one Shevet considered to be a real sin is not, and they look at another Shevet and they say, that's too bad a sin, that you can't even think of doing, but we're bringing a chatas for a medium level sin. And because every one of the Shvatim have their own different versions of what Mesiras Nefesh is, what an Ayla is, and what a shlum is supposed to be, and what a chatas is supposed to look like. So just like we said before, that the definition of a kara is different from one Shevet to another. The definition of a kaf of a spoon is different from one chair. The definitions are very different, and therefore the Torah has to go and spell out each shevet individually. The same thing is true when it comes to the karbonis, the kavonis behind the karbonis, and the definition, how to define the purpose of my mesiras nefesh, the purpose of my chatas. Every nasi is different. And every nasi being different, and then at the end it says the number of all, because at the end, again, they unify, they're able to come together and agree that we are all unanimously agreeing to the fact that all of the mesiras nefesh of every unique shevet is special and significant, and we can all be on the same page that it's real. And this is what the beauty of the end of Parshas Matzah is all about. And I think it's so relevant in our day and age. You know, we don't have Shvatim really so much anymore, besides for Shevet Levi and the rest of Klal Yisrael. Many of the Shvatim went missing. The 10 Shvatim, we don't really know where they are. It's one of the mysteries of history. But what we do have today in lieu of Shvatim is, of course, Minhagim. And we have people of various backgrounds. We have Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, and then each of those are broken up into different parts of the world. So you have, you know, under the Ashkenazim, you might have German Jews and Lithuanian Jews and Polish Jews and Russian Jews. And then the Sfaradim have Moroccan and Syrian and Egyptian and Persians. And they all are unique Shvatim in Klal Yisrael. They all have their own separate Minhagim. And they all have their own different Havarot, the different accents and how they read the Chumash, how they lane the Chumash, how they have their Minhagim are very different. Some, you know, might eat kitnias on Pesach, and some never would. Some eat gebrach on Pesach, some don't. But it's very important that the takeaway from Pinkus's idea is that we might not all share the same exact approach. We might all have our own unique minhagim, and we cherish our own minhagim as well. We should. But it's very important that when we look at other people's minhagim, assuming that they are legitimate minhagim and they have a mesera from generation to generation, and they have their gedolim and leaders that are, you know, that have carried forth these minhagim for generations, we have to respect everybody else's minhagim. We have to keep our own minhagim and not and hold them sacred and guard them and protect them and not allow them to be in any way diluted. But at the same time, when you see other people's minhagim, you have to very much be mechabing them. Just like the Nesiim, they saw things differently. They had their own minhagim. They had their own definitions of what a plate is and what different things look like. So we might have our own definitions of what different foods look like, what challah looks like, and what matzah looks like, and what cholent looks like, but that doesn't mean that other people's minhagim are in any way less valid than ours. They're just different. And just like the Nesiim at the end of the parsha goes and it counts all of the plates were 12, and all of the animals were this and this number, and all of the measurements of the flower offering was this, to show that we all were able to come together and to appreciate each other's minhagim and each other's hanhagas, each other's different practices. That's how Klal Yisrael, even today, must be. We have to respect each other's minhagim. It might not be our own, and we might be very fond of our own minhagim, and we should. But when you see other people, whether they're Hasidim or whether they're Litvaks or whether they're Tzardim or whatever it may be, we have to admire them and respect them and revere them, because they are as important as our minhagim are to us, their minhagim are to them. We'll just end with something that Rav Dessler writes in the Mishnah Eliyahu. It's a footnote. In the Mishnah Eliyahu, Rav Eliyahu Dessler writes, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants all of the different types of minhagim that Klal Yisrael has, and that's why he sent us into this galus. Within this galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that some Jews went to Germany, and some Jews went to Poland, and some Jews went to Morocco, and some Jews went to Russia, because wherever the Jew went, he was able to somehow adapt some of the practices of the Goyim of the host country into their own way of life. So, for example, if you find Hasidim who lived in Russia and Poland, the people, the Goyim of Russia and Poland, tend to be more jovial, more happy, and that rubbed off on the Jews that lived there, and that created the Hasidic movement. And Lithuanian Goyim are they're very intellectual, very like cold intellectuals, and that's how the Lithuanian Jews became. They became, you know, great Talmidei Chachamim and very, very much, you know, with a lot of discipline in terms of their learning, in terms of their analytics and understanding of Gemara, and that's what the legacy of Litho was. And you know, German Jews are very punctual and very medactic on minhagim, because that's what the host country was, very medactic and very punctual with everything. And Rebbe says HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the different variations of Jews in Klal Yisrael, every shevet with their own nusach, with their own nigin, with their own minhagim, and every single type of Jew, every Hasidish Jew, and Misnaged, and every single type of flavor of Jew is beautiful to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Every Jew has to maintain their own minhagim, but every Jew should also at the same time come together and have an appreciation for every other type of Jew that is continuing their own unique Messiah in Klal Yisrael. I'd like to wish all of you a wonderful Shabbos, and I'd like to thank you very much for listening this evening's shiur.